PR.
From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. We have a lot of news, including meeting the new director of housing and homelessness for Ulster County, Laura Nordstrom. We'll talk to her about housing instability and the impacts of the housing crisis on Ulster County. It's coming up in the second half of the program. And a lot of people are sick out there. You may have noticed colds, COVID, the flu, and more are all circulating this winter. In fact, there are four viral surges happening right now. Dr. Jody Gleidick, infectious disease specialist at Garnet Health, talks about winter viruses. That's coming up. But first, this is now the second week of the second Trump administration and the impacts of that factor being felt around the country, including in our region. As the Trump administration touts its crackdown on undocumented immigrants, the new Homeland Security Secretary, Kristi Noem, posted a video to social media this morning depicting people being escorted by police in New York City. She was there in New York City in person. And the former Republican South Dakota governor posted that video to Elon Musk's X with the caption, quote, "Criminal alien with kidnapping, assault, and burglary charges is now in custody thanks to ICE," end quote. Asked about the incident while visiting Schenectady, Governor Kathy Hochul said ICE raids in New York are nothing new, and she said she understood that federal authorities had specific names of individuals who had committed crimes.
We believe that the immigration system is broken. We do not have open borders here. That was never an intent. But I also, in the great state of New York, will not stand for children to be in fear in schools or people in churches, you know, cowering in basements out of fear and separating families. We have to stand up for these individuals. At the same time, we will cooperate, as allowed under state law, to remove individuals who could do harm to our citizens or just should not be here because they had a criminal record before they came here.
Thank you to Lucas Willard of the New York Public News Network for that update. We will have additional coverage of this immigration crackdown on Thursday morning here on Radio Catskill. Reverend Richard Witt, the executive director of Rural Migrant Ministries, will join Tim Bruno live on Radio Catskill. That's Thursday morning. In other news, officials and other folks from Washington, D.C., the places around the country, are reacting to President Trump's announcement last night of a freeze of federal funds, even as they try to understand exactly what that freeze is, how it works, and what its impacts might be. The new acting director of the Federal Office of Management and Budget sent a memo last night saying that as of 5 p.m. today, quote, federal agencies must temporarily pause all activities related to obligation or disbursement of all federal financial assistance, end quote. Reactions from our region include Ulster County Executive Jen Metzger, who sent a statement today expressing serious concern. Although the memo had few concrete details on how the pause will affect federally funded county programs and services, Metzger noted the order appears to be broad in its sweep. She said, quote, "This federal decision could have a very serious consequences for our communities and do real harm. The county administers about $60 million in federally funded projects, programs, and services, everything from emergency preparedness and public safety to housing, child welfare protection programs for seniors, public health, public transit, and infrastructure. The memorandum gives no consideration to the impact of this freeze on real people, and I thank Attorney General James and the other states planning to file suit against the federal government on the constitutionality of this decision," end quote, from Ulster County Executive Jen Metzger. And yes, AG James is heading a suit over this freeze in funds. She also announced that New York is currently locked out of systems that it uses to get federal reimbursements for the Medicaid health program. Attorney General James and a coalition of other Democratic attorneys general say the memo is unconstitutional, and the lawsuit that they are planning to file will attempt to keep funds flowing.
The president does not get to decide which laws to enforce and for whom. When Congress dedicates funding for a program, the president cannot pull that funding on a whim.
Attorney General Letitia James there of New York. Also, late this afternoon, in fact, just a little more than half an hour ago, we received a reaction from Congressman Josh Riley, representing New York's 19th Congressional District. who called it complete BS, but he didn't abbreviate it to BS, and said, quote, upstate New Yorkers work hard and pay for our taxes. The least we should expect in return is a government that doesn't screw us over just to give more handouts to billionaires and big corporations. I'm fighting back. If you're impacted and need help, please contact my office. End quote there from Congressman Josh Riley, again, reacting to that OMB memorandum freezing federal funds. That's for that news. We do have one more story, though. This is local news related to President Donald Trump's picks to head government agencies. A familiar name is being tapped to take on transit. And this former Republican representative who opposes congestion pricing is now on track to head the federal agency that oversees mass transit. WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind reports.
Mark Molinaro represented parts of the Hudson Valley in Congress until his election defeat in November. Sources familiar with the matter say Molinaro is now on track to lead the Federal Transit Administration in President Donald Trump's administration. The agency distributes around $20 billion a year. It provided billions to the MTA for projects like the Second Avenue subway and also steered $7 billion to fund the Gateway Project for a new train tunnel beneath the Hudson River. Spokespeople for Molinaro and the federal government didn't comment. In social media posts this month, Molinaro described congestion pricing as a, quote, cash grab. He also said the MTA should be more efficient with its spending. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
And thanks again to our partners in the New York Public News Network. Well, that's it for presidential impact news, at least for tonight. Now let's talk about viruses. If you feel like everyone around you is sick right now, it's not you. Well, actually, I don't know that for sure, but it's probably not you, because right now the U.S. is actually grappling with four major viral surges. Healthcare facilities across the country are seeing an overwhelming demand for care this month as cases of flu, COVID-19, RSV, and norovirus all continue to rise. Dr. Jody Golydick, an infectious disease specialist at Garnet Health, is keeping a close watch on the situation. She spoke to Tim Bruno on Radio Chatskill this morning to share insights on the current state of these winter illnesses and to offer advice on how you can protect yourself.
More people are heading indoors because there's been cold weather, especially recently. There's been a lot of pretty cold weather in New York State. People congregated and got together for the holidays, also adds to the spread. I think those are the major factors of what we see usually seasonally is, you know, more indoor time and more getting together.
Let's talk about the flu, the severity of the flu. Based on the current data, how does the severity of this year's flu compare to past seasons?
So this year's peak is in number of cases is still ongoing. We actually haven't hit our peak. We have about 46% higher increase just in the last week in the area. We actually are in terms of the total numbers, but our peak is higher already than what it was last year. Our peak isn't as high as the prior year, but definitely seeing a lot of cases, seeing it a little bit later this year than we did last year. And again, we haven't quite hit our peak yet, but looks like we've had, you know, higher peak than the prior year.
So if we haven't hit the peak, should folks be a little concerned about the ongoing flu season?
I think they need to be, you know, take precautions in terms of, you know, make sure you're up to date on your vaccines, make sure you're washing your hands. You know, if you're sick, make sure that you, you know, try to stay home and avoid contact with other people that may be at risk. And again, take common sense precautions. You know, if you're going to a crowded area, consider wearing a mask. You know, if try to avoid visiting sick people if you can, if it's possible. Hospitalization is also higher this year than last year in terms of our peak. It looks like we've started to see a downtrend, but we are seeing patients come into the hospital for flu also.
Let's talk about COVID-19. Still a bad virus, but how is that virus this winter compared to past seasons?
We're seeing moderate activity. Again, seeing more flu this season than COVID, but still also seeing both COVID and flu, people needing to be admitted, also people in the community.
And again, COVID-19 still could be a worse virus to get, but it seems as if it's being, if you're keeping score at home, outpaced by the flu. Let's talk a little bit about RSV. Has there been a decline in RSV cases in New York, or can you give us more insight into how RSV has impacted children this season and how these RSV vaccines have been effective in preventing severe cases?
So we did see our peak of RSV in December. So we have been seeing a downtrend in cases, but there's still, it still causes a burden of disease. Vaccination is very good about decreasing hospitalization, both in adults that are at risk and with children, particularly newborns and young children under the age of three, especially children coming into their first season. The vaccines for adults, you know, are 78% effective about preventing severe RSV. With children, vaccination is offered to the mothers during their pregnancy. In those cases, there's a decreased risk of about 70% of having to be hospitalized if your baby gets RSV. And then if the baby gets the immunoglobulin, it's about 90% effective of decreasing hospitalization. So both vaccine and immunoglobulin are great for decreasing severe RSV. And again, we still have, we did hit our peak, it looks like, but still a significant burden of disease, both in the elderly or people with health conditions like respiratory conditions and also in young children.
As we mentioned in the preview to this story in our top of the hour here, that, you know, these viruses surging or becoming, you know, more increased in the area during the winter is not unusual. But let's talk about norovirus. Those cases in the U.S. increased in 2025 with the highest levels in decades. They're surging also in New York City, too. What makes this virus so contagious? And what are some practical steps people can take to protect themselves and communities from the spread of norovirus?
So norovirus, the reason it's such a problem is that it takes a very small amount of the virus to become infected, and it's pretty resistant to environmental factors like heat, freezing, and even some of the like alcohol hand sanitizers. So what you can do, and again, if you're sick, what the common things that people see with norovirus is vomiting. Sometimes it's referred to as the winter vomiting virus, also diarrhea. But it's a gastrointestinal illness that people will get. Washing your hands with soap and water is the main thing you want to do. If you're having to care for someone that's sick, making sure you're washing your hands with soap and water. If you yourself are sick, avoid preparing food or handling food. If you're cooking food, making sure you're cooking it at least 145 degrees Fahrenheit. Trying to stay home, avoiding other people if you are sick, just because, again, it's very contagious because it doesn't take a lot to make you sick, and it's pretty hardy in the environment.
Norovirus, commonly referred to as stomach flu, as you said, vomiting, diarrhea, cramps, nausea are symptoms. You mentioned prevention measures, including washing your hands frequently. What about using something a little bit stronger, like a bleach solution?
You don't have to do that for your hands. Soap and water is fine, but for cleaning areas in terms of cleaning, where
surfaces.
Someone may have been sick, using a bleach solution is ideal, or checking whatever you're using to make sure that it is effective against norovirus.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Dr. Jody Galadik, infectious disease physician at Garnet Health, about the surges in winter viruses. Also wanted to ask you about some emerging threats, Dr. Galadik. The avian flu, that has been in the news. There's been an avian flu death in the U.S. It's a reminder, again, of potential new threats out there. How should folks stay vigilant about the potential for avian flu, and what are the current risks to public health?
The current risks for public health are still considered low. If you are someone that works with animals in, you know, the farming industry, those are the people that tend to be more at risk. So if you, you know, have handled a sick animal and things like that, making sure you're discussing that with your, you know, your public health department, your local department of health. In general, it's still low for the general public. Obviously, staying away from if you see sick animals or birds. Again, notifying your Department of Health as opposed to trying to manage the situation yourself.
Yeah, and just to be clear, in New York, there have been no new human cases of avian flu, no detections of cattle in New York. If you want to report sick or dead birds, you can call the New York State Department of Agriculture or the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation in Pennsylvania. That is the Environmental Protection Agency there as well. Want to ask you just, you know, looking ahead as we move through the winter, haven't reached peak yet in the flu. What trends do you expect to see in terms of the flu and the other viruses? And are there, you know, more health measures folks should be prepared for in the coming weeks?
So I think in general, we're hoping that we'll start to hit a herd peak with flu season. But just remember, flu season can last all the way till May. Sometimes June. The Department of Health will typically send out messaging once we've declared flu season is over. But again, that's usually in December and all the way to June. We've also seen at times with COVID and RSV, other seasons that are affected, especially with COVID. We've seen, you know, increases in cases in the summer. Same thing with RSV. So the big things that people can do is, you know, make sure you're up to date on your vaccinations. Now it's still not too late to get your flu vaccinations, your COVID vaccinations, and your RSV vaccinations if that's appropriate for you. Making sure, you know, you're doing the general things, washing your hands. If, you know, you're taking care of someone sick, making sure you're also sanitizing high-touch areas. Staying home if you're sick. Consider wearing a mask in areas that there may be a lot of people. Or places that you're going where there may be sick people, like the hospital. Currently in the hospital, we are encouraging visitors to wear surgical masks just because we know there's a lot of flu and people are coming to us with the flu, and we don't want visitors to inadvertently get infected. And, you know, again, common sense things of also trying to bring in fresh air. The CDC has some great resources of, you know, if you can hold events outside, even though it is cold, or letting fresh air into your house, also improving the circulation.
And you mentioned it's still advisable to get a vaccine against flu if you haven't already, even though we're deep into flu season. Is it still safe to administer vaccines to prevent flu and COVID-19 at the same time?
Yes. Absolutely.
And is it still okay to get that vaccine or other vaccines, again, this late into the winter virus season?
Yes. If you're not up to date on your vaccines yet, it's no better time than now to go and plan on getting those vaccines.
As an infectious disease physician, do you have like a rule or advice that you say to people like, hey, here's the kind of end date for you to get that vaccine?
It's always hard because I think in general, we don't know when the flu season is going to end this year, and we don't know when we may see more cases of COVID. So, you know, it's always encouraged to try to stay up to date on vaccines. And again, right now is the time to get it if you haven't gotten all your vaccines yet.
All right. We've been talking to Dr. Jody Galadik from Garnet Health, an infectious disease physician, about the current surge in winter viruses. Thank you so much, Doctor.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, homelessness in the Catskills and in the Hudson Valley. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
I think it would actually be a mistake to think that these kind of strategies are limited just to, like, Hollywood. You know, it makes you wonder how these strategies are being applied in other realms by politicians, by governments, by business executives.
I'm Natalie Kitroev. That's today on The Daily from The New York Times.
Hi, I'm Kusar Grace KG, host of the Music Emporium. 2 hours of great music right here on Radio Catskill. Sometimes I start out with a little bit of talk concerning things in the world for the week. Then I jump into some tunes that you will enjoy. Jazz, funk, blues, and more. So come and hang out with me, the Music Emporium. Tuesday night, 7 to 9, right here on Radio Catskill.
It's The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. Laura Nordstrom was recently appointed the first ever director of housing and homelessness in Ulster County, part of the Department of Social Services there. Laura previously served as the director of research and operational programs in the county's executive office, and in that role, she led efforts to help constituents navigate emergency housing and related support services. Now she's stepping into a new position that'll help oversee initiatives like the Family-Centered Services Program and also to coordinate with agencies and community partners to improve housing stability and inclusivity across Ulster County. Radio Catskills' Patricio Rubio had a chance to speak to Laura to find out more.
So I am not an Ulster County native. I did grow up a hop, skip, and a jump across the river in Dutchess County. And I came over to this side when I was an undergrad. And after graduating New Paltz, I spent the first 12 years of my career doing nonprofit work with youth. So a good chunk of Boys and Girls Club. I spent a few years at REPCO doing family self-sufficiency program, which is a really interesting version of Section 8 that allows families to uplift. My favorite thing about that transition is that I went from Boys and Girls Club with kids to working a lot with parents of the same families. And then, you know, it's a little bit more time in nonprofit. And I switched over to government in 2019, working for a state elected. I worked for Kevin Cahill and went back to school to get my master's in public administration. And after a failed run for city council in Kingston, Pat Ryan, who was at the time Ulster County executive, took notice of the work that I was doing. And he reached out and I ended up working in the county executive's office. In 2022 is when I joined the county officially. So I've been up in the exec's office for the last 3 years. And now I'm over at DSS doing some great work over here.
That's great. That's great. Congratulations on that. You're on this job now as the director of housing and homelessness. What is your outlook, your goals for this position and for your office?
So this position is really interesting in that it started out as something that we had planned to just have a small unit of people, case managers, to go out and work with the homeless population in motels, you know, work with street outreach teams. And it, because the state actually funded the program, it changed our approach. We were able to expand the caseworkers, and my role specifically became a lot, not broader, but more far-reaching, I think. And it allows a lot more policy development and working with different agencies in order to coordinate. One of the things that we will be doing is having case managers work in motels. Specifically, we've got a couple at the Kingston Motel, and we'll have others that are stationed to DSS and going around the county to meet people where they're at. And I think the big thing that we plan to do and that we're very hopeful about doing is, again, meeting people where they're at in order to enhance the services that they're receiving and really help people out of situations. I used a phrase the other day with somebody. They talked about getting somebody to the top of a mountain, and I was like, we're the Sherpas. You don't just leave somebody at a trailhead and say, that's the direction you go in. Our job is to help people really get through, and more importantly, to help people get out of emergency placements and into permanent housing. So I'm excited about that. And I'm excited to work with our community resources to see how they're supported, where the gaps are in the system. We're all very aware that the system is not the greatest all the time and it needs some work. And so I think a big part of what I'm going to be doing is figuring out the pain points and then where the policy change needs to happen in order to fix those pain points and relieve the pressure for people and the system and also build the system better.
Now, in your previous role as the Director of Research and Operational Programs, you work closely with constituents on housing issues. How do you think that experience will shape your approach to tackling homelessness and housing instability in this new role?
So a lot of the constituents that we would get in the county executive's office are people who would filter up from DSS. So, you know, you'd have a complaint coming from somebody who, you know, they didn't feel good about their interaction with DSS or they didn't understand what was going on. And so I think, you know, when people are at that point, they're up here. And I think throughout my career, not just in executive's office, I've always done constituent services, you know, whether it was program work, but working for Kevin Cahill also, I've got experience meeting people in crisis and kind of helping them come down a little bit and then work through a solution. So I think the experience of dealing with people both in that I've dealt with people in this situation that I'm working with people now for a number of years. And I think it well prepared me. And I think having difficult populations that I've had to work with in my past also, you know, lends itself to being able to navigate with some of these folks.
We have a point in time count coming up, count of homeless individuals. Can you tell us more about that particular event and how do you ensure an accurate count? And what does the count tell you?
So the point in time count, a lot of people refer to as the PIT count, is a HUD requirement. It is unfortunately required by HUD to be done during a very specific last 10 days of January. I don't know that that design is conducive to having an accurate count of the homeless situation in the county, but that is the time in which we're required to do that. I can tell you that the Continuum of Care, it's a countywide network run through CARES New York. And I want to emphasize that these folks have been doing this work long before I joined the Continuum of Care from the exec's office. This is my first year participating in the count directly. I've helped with planning in previous years, but this is the first year I'm going to be out with the canvassers, which is exciting. The point in time count tells us how many people are not housed right now within the HUD definition of not being housed. So, you know, we hold these events for people to come to get resources in an effort to bring people to us. We send canvas teams out, like along the Midtown Linear Trail, for example. And the idea is to get as many people as possible who we know are homeless, like in advance, we're going out that we, myself personally, I want to again clarify, we have so many great partners, but like the Oracle Outreach Team, Department of Mental Health, you know, they're doing this work every day and they're doing this outreach to get these folks to come to this event to make sure they get counted. And I want to emphasize that one. They're making sure they get counted to the best of their ability. You know, we all are aware it's going to be an undercount, but the purpose of it is for HUD to be aware of what's going on, and that affects funding that comes through. So it is important that we get as many people as possible. We report as many people as possible that we know are homeless, that they're counted.
What is one misconception about homelessness that you wish that more people understood? And how you work to dispel that?
These folks didn't ask to be in the situation that they're in. Not every homeless person that you see is, you know, a person suffering from mental illness. And even if they are, that mental illness does not make them a bad person, a dangerous person, or a person any less deserving of a place to live. I think there is this idea of everyone having bootstraps to pull them up with. And I think the biggest thing I would love to change about people's perception of homelessness is there's times where those bootstraps just don't exist and they never will. And that person still deserves a house. They still deserve a roof over their head. They still deserve some amount of a life that allows them to really live and not just exist and get by. And so I think that for me is the big one. I want to help people see the humanity out there.
Laura, before we go, is there anything else we have not touched on you want folks to know?
I think the big thing I always want to emphasize is that there are good people doing the work, whether they're in social services, whether they're one of our partner agencies. I'm not here to wave a wand. I don't have all of the fixes, but I am here to help make things work better. And, you know, to support the people doing this work. I don't like the idea that, you know, sent from on high to fix things. And I very much am excited to be a resource and to be working with this group of people who do this work every day. So I think that's the big thing. You know, it's really important. We're all working towards a goal and working together. And so that's the last thing I always like to emphasize.
For those who may be interested in volunteering for the point in time count, where can they get information? Who can they contact?
So they can contact Lisa McDonald at RepGo. RepGo's information is on their website. Lisa's information is directly on their website as well. They can email me. My email is lnor@yo.ulster.ny.gov. And they can also email Rhonda. We're actually in, there is an article I think that went out that has a direct contact information that I'm more than happy to share with you as well. But yeah, we're out there. They can reach out to me directly.
We will talk to Laura Nordstrom, Director of Housing and Homelessness for Ulster County. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much. And I look forward to talk to you again.
Yes, thank you so much. I look forward to catching up again.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Robayo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio, for that report. Well, thank you for listening to the Local Edition. That's it for tonight's show. I've been your host, Jason Dole. I will be back tomorrow night. Before we get into the music tonight at 7 o'clock, we have Mr. Kusar Grace Music Emporium. We still have more news for you. Up next, it's The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The Artist Cottage Bed and Breakfast, a newly renovated farmhouse that sleeps four with full gourmet cooked breakfast provided daily, located near the top of Hauk Mountain Road in the town of Walton. More information at GreatWesternCatskills.com.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, we are celebrating the Lunar New Year with Chinese cooking super bloggers Sarah and Caitlin Leung from The Walks of Life, Vietnamese icon Andrea Nguyen, and Korean chef extraordinaire Hoonie Kim. It's dumplings and rice cakes for everyone. Coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill. WJFF.